Imagine that you're in a dungeon, bent over and tied down. Someone in stiletto heels and a tight leather dominatrix outfit is patting your bum with a cane.
You like a little warm up, don't you? You like a little warm up, don't you?
Suddenly, whack. What should your reaction be? Hello and welcome to Street Stories. I'm Kevin Clare and I'll answer that at the end of the program. Just a warning though, there is disturbing material coming up. For some people, this is a play session, combining pain as pleasure, dominated by someone who enjoys seeing you suffer. It's the centuries-old practice of bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism, or BDSM, an underworld of masters and slaves, of mistresses and submissives, either a service one pays for, or a lifestyle a couple commits to, a scene where torture equipment is desired and celebrated.
These are the whips. They go basically from soft to hard. This is a very soft warm-up whip. I generally start here and see how far I can go with clients who are into being flogged. This is one of my favorite whips. As you can see, it's well on that side of the thing, and it's great. I love it. Get out of here. The way here.
Everyone has at one stage or another had the desire to whack someone for doing, to really hurt someone, and thinking that they'll get a kick out of hurting someone, or they've had the urge to control someone or to be controlled, and trying to say that that can exist in other people but not myself is really trying to deny something that is buried deep inside you.
Well, my first introduction was a girlfriend some 14 odd years ago who had a desire to be spanked, and she craved it. I first thought that, how disgusting, I could never ever touch or hurt another woman. But she encouraged me. I took her across my lap, I held her, and I started spanking, and I found I enjoy this. It's something I've been looking for quite some time.
I have somebody who comes and wants me to cut into his flesh and probe it with instruments and that sort of thing, and he loves the intimacy of that. And he loves my enjoyment of his pain. And it is my enjoyment of his pain that he enjoys, rather than the pain itself.
It's not so much the pain or the actual spanking, although for some people it will be. For me, it is the reaction that I get from the submissive, the devotion, the attention that she gives back to me, her desires, her needs, her need to please. I find that the reaction that I get is such an awe-inspiring reaction. You have control over another person who does what they can, what they need to please, to do whatever you desire.
It's a real buzz in a lot of ways to give them an experience which is transforming in some ways, which is potentially dangerous, which is potentially sort of psychologically hazardous, and have them come out of that feeling on a total high or transformed even better.
You were telling me about subspace. Explain that.
Oh, every different person will give you a different definition of subspace, I think. Some people feel that it's a state of mind that you can only get to through experiencing different physical sensations of pain versus pleasure. It's almost, for me, it's a meditative state. It's a state of almost an altered consciousness. It's a state of, old Dom of mine said, it's a state of erotic bliss for the mind.
I also just find it a real buzz if I find a real pain slot. It becomes a little bit of a game. Can you cane me hard enough? I think so. Let's see.
Does it ever scare you? Scare me as far as what I am potentially capable of doing. I know me. It's taken me a long time to get to know me, but I would never put onto someone else something that I am not sure of myself. I know where I can go. I know my limits. I never ever go further than what I am prepared or capable of handling, and I certainly don't go anywhere further than what the submissive that I am responsible for is capable of going.
I must at all times know that the person is consenting. So I have some people who come to me and say, I want to be tied up and given 60 strokes of the cane as hard as you can, no mercy. No matter what I say, don't stop. I basically say, no, I won't do that. And that goes beyond my boundaries.
In fact, I don't do humiliation. I don't do you prance around in, you know, little underwear and a French maid's outfit and clean my house. That's not what gets me about S&M.
Why not?
A, because instructing somebody on how to clean your house takes longer than cleaning your house. B, if they're not going somewhere in their head, if it's not something that's actually making them reassess what they think, reevaluate the world, reevaluate their relationship to their body, it's not interesting for me. It's SM's transformative power that's interesting, not watching somebody in a French maid's outfit clean my dungeon.
Okay, now that's a swing. You basically can tie somebody down here. Their legs go up here. And you can, for example, use electro-torture equipment on them. You can do all sorts of things. Whatever your evil mind decides.
Do you have your electro-torture?
Yeah, I've got electro-torture gear of different sorts. I've got various TENS machines. I've got a violet wand. It's not working at the moment. It's in for repair, but...
For some people, BDSM is sexual foreplay. For others, the pain alone is the sex. It's an individual preference.
I'm submissive. Having said that, I'm not submissive to just anyone and everyone. And that's a mistake that a lot of people make. A lot of submissives especially, I think, believe that they have to be submissive to anyone who says, on your knees, bitch. And that's not me. Actually, I tend more towards slavery. I could go to a deep level of slavery for the right master.
Because I was going to ask, is there ever any a time when you're taking further and further in that you fight against it?
Often, yes, often. I rebel. I have this saying, and I say it to a lot of people who say, oh, I want this, I want that, you know. I say, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. He's arrogant, but I love that. He's pig-headed, but I love that too. He's controlling, but I love that.
How much of your life is master-slave and how much of your life is just two people in love?
I virtually can say most of it is master-slave. We live the lifestyle, we live the reality that is master-slave. Slave gets me a cup of coffee, she comes to me, she gets down on her knees and presents me the cup of coffee. She desires to do this, I expect it of her, and it's a treasure to see.
Do you agree with that in the percentages that you play master-slave all the time?
Yes, I do. And having said that, one of the things that he expects from me is when I'm at work to be a capable person. He doesn't expect me to submit to everyone who crosses my path. I'm his submissive and only his submissive. When I'm out in the workforce or out in everyday life, I'm a capable person. We actually went to the zoo on Sunday, the two of us together, and we were standing in the line waiting to buy an ice cream, and this girl next to us tried to push in, and I just looked at her and very sternly said, excuse me, but we were next.
And I don't know who was more flabbergasted, Master or her, that I actually, oh gosh, you know, this little domain has come out sort of thing.
Look, I'm standing naked before you. Don't you want more than my sex? I can scream as loud as your last one, but I can't claim innocence. Oh God, could it be the weather?
I wouldn't say it's exactly sexual. I mean, sensual, yes. Sexual, no, not really. I mean, I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't attracted to Henry, because I am. But there's nothing really sexual between us. We don't have sex.
Are you allowed to have sex with other people, or...?
Absolutely.
No.
Something that was made perfectly clear to me at the beginning was my sex life is my sex life. I can have long-term relationships, but when it comes to SM, we paint that on a different canvas entirely.
If you found a significant other, would you still play with Henry?
Yes.
How do you think your partner would take that?
Well, I'd make it very clear from the beginning that, like, I have my SM with Henry and to a lesser extent with a couple of other people, but they will have that part of me relatively safely to themselves.
I couldn't be a slave in the sense that I handed over all that power and control to someone that I wasn't 110% sure still respected me as an individual and expected me to grow with him in a relationship. So in a sense, the giving over of control is my kink. It's what I get off on. So being able to be sexually open and be used as a canvas to for him to paint his desires on is for me an extremely sensuous and erotic function.
I also noticed at the party I met you at, you even ask your master if you can go to the toilet.
That's correct.
Do you do that every time?
Or? Yes, yes I do. When we first started coming together, and it took a good 6-7 months for us to come together, part of the awareness that he was the dom and that he had the control, that I had, you know, willingly given him that level of control over certain functions in my life, that was part of the awareness training for me, to be constantly reminded that I'm the submissive and that as a submissive I have handed over the decision making and most of my rights to him.
Does he ever say no?
Yes, he has.
And what happens then?
Oh, it throws me completely. Because, obviously most of the time he doesn't, but occasionally he'll throw in a no here and there just to remind me that it's still not, even though he says yes most of the time, it's still not my, I shouldn't be expecting that I'll always get my way. So.
What's the longest he's made you hold out?
Oh, only an hour or two.
But that must be terrible.
Well, I'm actually very vocal now. It's a case of, okay, I've been wanting to ask you this for an hour or so already, but may I please go to the toilet? And I sort of let him know how urgent the situation is, or non-urgent.
He taught me that as a person, self-worth came with serving. I always had a deep feeling about that, but he reassured me that if I did everything for him and was there for his beck and call, that he'd always be there for me. I had to cook for him, I had to clean for him, I had to wash for him, had to mow 5 acres of lawn for him, had to make sure the cars were polished, had to entertain him and his friends, never sat down when I ate with, when it was entertaining, I was always making sure the next course was coming.
I remember a girlfriend said to me once when she went into a master-slave relationship, she said, I've had to do 8 loads of washing today. This wasn't what I thought it was all about. I thought, but that's real life. You know, people don't take into account the real life aspect of it as well. You have a normal life. You've got to pay bills. You've got to live life as normal. But I've discovered I really should teach you how to use the iron.
I wonder, I'm ducking for cover as I say that.
Why is it important for me wanting to serve and all that? Through my childhood. Through my mother and what my mother used to do me. Mum used to come home drunk 3 o'clock in the morning when I was 8, 9 years old. Used to get us out of bed, used to flog us, the house wasn't clean enough, then make us clean the house top to bottom. Then we'd finish that about 7 o'clock, then we'd have to go to school. Mum was never home, she was working or out at the pub, so we, at the age of 10, I could cook, clean, wash, sew, iron, mow, yeah, me and my two sisters.
When I was a child, Mum and Dad were travelling overseas all the time, so I had a mentally disabled sister with severe brain damage, and basically by the time I was 10 years old, I'd learned to take total responsibility for her. I was, you know, feeding her, clothing her, everything that Mum and Dad would normally do whilst they were away, I would do because the nannies were completely useless and didn't want to get that involved. So I think by the time I'd grown up, I'd realised that I'd probably been taking on a lot more responsibility for things in life that I probably needed than I needed to take. And I think that we tended to do that. So by the time I was in my old living a life where I was taking on so much responsibility and so having so much control over things in my life, that I think part of the attraction for being a submissive is the opportunity to find a relationship where you can actually let go. And I think that's where a lot of it comes from, is that ability to release yourself.
You're listening to Street Stories on Radio National. Come with me now to the Hellfire Nightclub. The music is loungy, funky. The furniture is mostly red. All body shapes strut around in their best leather, all exposing different body parts, all catching up with fellow kingsters ready to watch the show. Two performers, Ultra and Emmy, know how to please an audience.
I've got a very particular style. I like mess and, you know, those types of shows where they're funny, where the audience laughs, where Emmy looks up in the middle and is like, how did you make me do this?
Definitely.
Yeah. Like, those are the ones that, you know, when I look at Emmy and say, Emmy, today you're going to be a pig. And Emmy's like, oh, God, what vile substance is she going to use? And why am I crawling across the floor, oinking
with
a sheep?
Painted on my back.
Painted on my back. And I mean, I don't do those shows about humiliation. I do them about fun and about laughs. And
if I took it too seriously and felt offended, then it just give me entirely the wrong, the wrong feeling.
Yeah.
Because that's not the case. I'd hardly ever met a gay or lesbian person in my life, to tell you the truth.
Which is funny, because I have had this conversation with her. In the show, I touch you in ways that are a little bit sexual. You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay, you know. Yeah. And that's kind of funny, because Emmy presented to me with a boyfriend, and a boyfriend was standing on the other side of the rack for that first session. So I'm looking into his eyes, watching him watch his partner just disappear. Disappear off into the
experience.
So it was kind of, you know, there's sort of levels of that being kind of intimidating, and also because I'm trying to make him feel okay about what's happening as well as watching.
You did go to quite a length to make him feel comfortable about what was happening.
The other thing is, though, it's really useful to have them on the other side of the frame, because if she starts to panic, he's going to know it before I do, because he knows her expression. Considering when Emmy first met me, she didn't think she was attractive. And one of my goals has been to convince her that this is not true. And she actually told me the story of why she didn't think she was attractive. And it grew from growing up on the northern beaches and being surrounded by blonde Barbie dolls and only seeing that one particular style as beautiful. And I think the one thing that's changed is, A, Emmy can see that she's attractive, but B, she's also changed her standard of beauty from northern beaches to freaks and weirdos.
Exactly, which is a much more interesting standard. Yeah. Frankly, even if I was size 8 and you know, had boobs out to here, I don't think I'd want to be in that culture, because it's just not as interesting. It's much more fun to be able to say, well, I'm attracted to, you know, this type of person and that type of person, and, you know, size 18 and size 8 and the whole... Yeah. Spectrum of people.
Have you ever had any neighbour complaints? Or
the what? No. I've had several parties here where I've had sort of all 50 kinksters of different sorts. And I've never had any complaints. A bit of interest from some of the neighbours. I'm in the middle of working and stuff here, but in here we have the medical room here.
What do you have in here?
I have the speculums and stuff like that. This is a vaginal speculum. Somewhere around here I've got a three-jawed anal speculum, which is good fun. We've got the dental gags, which keep the mouth open. I do basically nurse fantasy sorts of things.
I'm more into submission than I am into pain. And someone said to me once, a female friend actually said that, I know you're into submission, you're not into pain, but sometimes the two go hand in hand. And I thought long and hard about that, and I thought, that's right. And my desire is to please him, and he's a sadist. So even though I can't say that I enjoy the pain, I enjoy the submission that comes with the pain.
Nothing beats a good flogging. Not to the point of pain, like, you know, extreme pain, but I equate a good flogging to a good massage. It just gets rid of all the knots in your back, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
It's very hard to explain how good pain feels to someone that's never experienced good pain.
Yeah. Well, there's a good pain, bad pain divide. Good pain is pain that you A, accept, B, want, and C, process as pleasure. And if you look at what I do in a session, I contrast sensations. So it might be something that hurts, and then it might be a very soft touch, and then something that hurts, until the two blur. So Emmy might jump screaming when I touch her softly, and then groan in pleasure when I hit her with a cane, because the two have become so interchangeable that she doesn't know. Whereas bad pain is falling over and hurting your knee. Bad pain is twisting your ankle.
Women like blood.
Why do you think that is? Men like pain, women like blood.
Oh, women like pain too. Women generally can take a heavier beating than most men can.
Unfortunately, I saw an incident where someone was flogging a person and hitting the kidney area, which is a huge no-no, absolute no-no. And luckily, one of the experienced submissives in the group stood up and said, "No, stop. This, look what you're doing." And nothing is as damaging to your reputation as doing a scene publicly and not providing adequate levels of aftercare. Nothing will damage you more. People will notice that. Going to a party and seeing a submissive sitting on the floor with their head hid in their hands, and whilst the dom's out the back having a drink with friends, is not the kind of reputation you want to be saddled with. So, yeah, it's very important.
The master always will control the sex act as a slave. Every good couple will have a safe word, which is ours is bananas, because it's not a word that you're going to use often during sex, is it? "Oh honey, pass me the bananas." Well, unless you're into fruit, but with those words, sometimes the master won't really listen, you know. Some masters can be, I've had one experience that I had where I was raped by four masters. I asked them to stop, safe words were used, and they didn't stop.
How did you deal with that experience afterwards, the next day, the day after?
It didn't really worry me, because you can ask any of my partners, whenever I go into depression, I think of myself as a dirty whore. So to me, it was just an act that a dirty whore would do. So it
and that's a good thing, or
it's a mechanism I have built in myself, so I don't let little things like that destroy me.
Now, we've had a lot of discussions lately on whether or not we have the right to come forward and say, okay, well, this person, you know, is perhaps a dangerous person, or is a person who doesn't play safely. Do we really have a right to warn other people of that person? Morally and ethically, of course we do. But being a litigious society, the way we're in, it's very hard to know where warning someone of the safety issues that you feel might be in jeopardised, where that fits in with slandering someone or defaming someone. It's a line, and I don't know where the answer to that is.
And then this is the catacomb. You might. This is the more hardcore dungeony, real, genuine dungeon. We've got this for putting people into, different bits of equipment. Lots, plenty of rings for chaining people to the walls. In here, I've actually got cells, so I can keep somebody down here in the cell for days at a time.
Mm.
And do interrogation sessions, and then we could just keep people down here, come down every once in a while and beat the crap out of them, throw them back in the cell. If they get dirty, we just throw a bucket of water over them or whatever.
Let's play master and servant. Master and servant. Let's play master and servant. Master and servant.
After I thanked Henry for the session, which involves me getting down on hands and knees and kissing his boot, we'll usually go sit down and I'll like snuggle up, or we'll have a cigarette and a drink or something, yeah, and enjoy the rest of the party.
What about physically, say the wounds and whatever, how do they heal? What do you need to put on them? What can you wear and what can't you wear?
Oh yeah, that's a bit of an issue. There's a lot of submissives out there, though, who are very proud of what they call war wounds that they receive after a good session, so they've got no problem in showing you. But yes, I mean, for me, when I was with a dom that had a particular petulance for caning and stuff like that, it was a case of, you know, I'm going to work tomorrow, you can't do this, you can't put any marks where they'll be seen.
One thing that's really, really important is when you finish a session, because you've done something that takes away somebody's right to choose, and I mean, it's only taken it away peripherally because they have consented, but you have to make sure you put them back together at the end. You have to give them back all of that self-confidence and all of that ability to make decisions. And then you start to talk to them in the voice that lets them know that you're not their mistress. Like, so, hey, did you have fun? Was it good? You know, what did I do wrong? What could I do better? Or anything like that. It's almost like a little debrief where you make sure that they're going away as a whole person.
So how should you react when you're tied up, being whipped by a dominatrix? What is the correct protocol? Well, you count each stroke.
One. Thank you, mistress. Two. Thank you, mistress. Three. Thank you, mistress. Four. Thank you, mistress.
Technical production on today's Street Stories was by Jenny Parsonage, with original music by Micah D. Wolf. Executive producer was Claudia Taranto. I'm Kevin Clare.
The ultimate form of punishment in the negative side is to give her something that she doesn't want. You take your slave, you place her in the lounge room and hogtie her. You gag her. You turn on the TV, switch on the cricket, and you sit down and argue every ball with the commentator.
That is just so cruel, Master. That is too big a punishment for a girl to bear.